All right, well, let me jump on into the opening monologue, The Right Side Way, and I will remind you guys that every single day, The Right Side Way monologue, the way we start this show, brought to you by attorney Stan McDonald from the law firm of Wilmer & Lee. I'll tell you more about Stan McDonald here in just a moment, but he's the sponsor of The Right Side Way monologue. So yeah, I'm going to be talking about Canada for a bit today, and you may wonder why, and I'm here to tell you. Because Canada is in many ways like us. They are a nation of the Western Hemisphere. They're a democracy. They're a believer in free trade. They are the only nation I can think of with whom we share sports leagues. In our case, it's professional baseball, hockey, and basketball. Canada by itself actually accounts for over 14% of our international trade, which means roughly $1 trillion in goods shipped back and forth in almost an even amount every single year. But Canada is also just like us in that they have politics. Politics that right now is in the hands of an uber-liberal group of progressives who want to socialize everything and believe that government spending is the only way to resolve the ills of the world. So as a result, Canada is facing economic and political crisis. Our biggest trade partner, one of our longest-running alliances, our neighbor with whom we share one of the longest borders in the world, is showing signs of cracking. Over the last couple of years, they've experienced civil unrest, economic instability, and they have a feckless leader named Justin Trudeau who embarrasses them on the world stage. But just like the U.S., Canadians are pushing back. Canadians have had enough of record inflation, curtailing of civil liberties, and illegal immigration. I mean, the Canadian border does not get the same attention as the Mexican border, but it's still a huge problem. Illegal immigration and drug trafficking into the U.S. from Canada has reached massive new levels. In fact, some reports that I read just this morning indicate that illegal border crossings from our north in the past 10 months have been higher than all of the previous 13 years combined. I mean, it's gotten so bad that incoming President Donald Trump has threatened to put a massive tariff on imports from Canada, and that has not gone unnoticed. And all of a sudden, Justin Trudeau's socialist political governance is on its heels, and I'm glad. I mean, I, for one, I want the old Canada back, like, right now. But as I was thinking about all this, I couldn't help but think of an incredible story about a joint venture between the U.S. and Canada that most Americans don't know about. About a time when we were more than just allies. A time when we actually formed one of the most legendary special operations fighting units from men on both sides of the border. It was called the 1st Special Service Force, and it was legendary in World War II. It was a unit whose nickname became the Devil's Brigade, a unit who wore the only patch of its kind in the form of a red arrowhead that had the words USA and Canada in white letters on it. And if you look at the modern patch for the U.S. Army Special Forces, the Green Berets, you'll notice it's also in the shape of an arrowhead. That modern design for modern Special Forces was taken directly from the 1st Special Service Force patch because they are considered part of the Special Forces lineage. And to my knowledge, there has never been another time in U.S. history where two nations formed one unit to fight together, and their story is worth telling. So some years ago, I was a captain in the 20th Special Forces Group, and we planned for some training in Montana at a small installation called Fort Harrison on the outskirts of Helena. Montana is a beautiful place, rugged, the nickname Big Sky Country. It fits it so well because you feel like your view of the sky and the expansive vistas just go on and on. But aside from the training that we did, which was really solid, I also was excited to go there because I already knew as a history buff that Fort Harrison in Montana was where the 1st Special Service Force was originally formed up. They mustered in and trained right there at Fort Harrison, and there's a small museum still there right next to the barracks dedicated to their memory. But what I did not know is that several members of the original unit had moved back to Helena after World War II, and there were still several of these old warriors living there when I was there. And one of the highlights of my time in Helena was hosting a unit barbecue with members of the original 1st Special Service Force coming in to spend time with us. In 1942, the U.S. was fully at war. Lieutenant Colonel Robert Frederick was assigned to the Operations Division of the General Staff, but he had notions of a commando unit that could strike deep into enemy territory. Now, he had actually argued against an original plan to strike into Nazi territory in Norway, but the General Staff, they wanted something done, and so Frederick was given the job of creating an all-volunteer unit of commandos for missions deep behind enemy lines. The odd thing was, the decision was made to share the unit's roster with Canada. So there were 1,800 men total, 900 each from the U.S. and Canada. The Canadian Army paid its men, but the uniforms and the ultimate command of the new unit came from America. So the recruiting began. And the Canadians, they apparently took the matter seriously. They recruited and hand-selected their best members of their various airborne battalions. 900 Canadians showed up with pride and esprit de corps. The U.S.? Not so much. The U.S. put out recruitment posters at all units across the Army. But the recruiting posters, they called for single men, aged 21 to 35, that had to have 3 or more years of grammar school. Okay. The occupations that they preferred as part of your background were that you were rangers, lumberjacks, north woodsmen, hunters, prospectors, explorers, game wardens. Married men were not accepted for the force. Recruiting teams scoured the Army for ideal candidates, but U.S. Army leaders did not want to give up their best men because their units were still being formed, too. No one wanted to lose the best, so the U.S. largely sent the worst. We're talking a group of roughnecks, discipline issues, disorderly conduct. Basically, the U.S. units offloaded their problem children to the new 1st Special Service Force. It was not a good start. Those chosen, due to the secrecy of the mission, were often told that they had been selected to undergo training for a parachute unit. The unit was so secretive that many soldiers didn't even know where they were when they arrived in Helena for training, as the windows of the trains they were riding in were all painted black. So they trained in parachute operations, they conducted 60-mile ruck marches, they developed new techniques for winter warfare and mountaineering. They learned small unit tactics like raids and ambushes. They learned the use of all kinds of weapons. They were taught hand-to-hand combat and knife fighting. A special knife was actually made just for members of the unit. A replica of that same knife is now part of the modern U.S. Army Ranger Memorial at Fort Benning. And the officers of the 1st Special Service Force wore branch insignia on their uniforms of crossed arrows, and that is still worn today by the officers of the modern U.S. Special Forces. The men of the force, they were also taught to fight dirty. And they also fought each other. A lot. Like the U.S. and Canadians didn't merge well at all at first. International borders can create rivalries, and the mess hall at Fort Harrison apparently saw more than one bloodletting as the men fought each other time and again. But eventually, they settled, and relationships formed. It is said by the end of their time in combat that most of the men didn't know if the guy next to them in the foxhole was from the north or the south of the border, and they did not care. They had become a lethal fighting force. So legend has it that while carrying out operations against the Germans, a member of the 1st Special Service Force found a journal of a German lieutenant. And the journal contained the following entry. It said, quote, "The black devils are all around us every time we come to the line. We never hear them come." And so they became known then as the Devil's Brigade. And they had cards printed up with the 1st Special Service Force insignia and the words, "Das Dicke Ende kommt noch," which means the worst is yet to come. Printed in red ink and left on the cards on the bodies of dead Germans as a form of psychological warfare. They became known. In fact, the Germans even put a bounty on their heads. They fought in Italy, and in 1943, they actually seized a mountain fortress called Mont La Defensa. The U.S. command had estimated it might take the men of the Devil's Brigade 4 to 5 days to seize the high ground, but the U.S. Canadian force took it in 2 hours. Marching up the mountains with artillery pounding with the enemy to their direct front so hard that they said they felt like they were marching into hell, but they took it. They fought at Anzio, and they moved on into France. Like I said, the Germans put a bounty on their head and would even give German soldiers a special leave if they could capture one of the members of the unit. In France in 1944, the 1st Special Service Force attacked and killed an entire German battalion of 1,000 men. The unit was later disbanded in December of 1944. But by then, the 1,800 men of the U.S. Canadian Commando Unit had accounted for over 12,000 German casualties. They captured 7,000 enemy soldiers. They sustained massive injuries and losses themselves as a unit. Hardly anybody came out without a Purple Heart. The day the unit was disbanded, the American commander held a parade honoring the unit. And to end the ceremony, the Canadian elements were dismissed by being honored by the American troops with a pass in review, eyes to the right, officers saluting. And to this day, on December 5th of every year, the U.S. and Canadian paratroopers celebrate Menton Day by jumping together in honor of the 1st Special Service Force. Modern special operations units from both the U.S. and Canada today trace their lineage back to the Devil's Brigade of World War II. Movies and books have been made about them. In 1983, when the U.S. Army Special Forces first began wearing the Special Forces tab on their uniforms, it was retroactively awarded to any member of the World War II's 1st Special Service Force from 50 years before. And in 2015, the U.S. Congress awarded the first Special Service Force, made up of men from two countries, the Congressional Gold Medal, which is the highest honor that Congress can award. So yeah, I look at it and I think how special that is. And I'll be honest with you, I'm ready to have the old Canada back. I'm ready to have our neighbors who we go to war with whom we share so much history. So get her done, Canada. Let's get rid of Trudeau and get back to being who we know we are. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way.